Welcome to The Unseen Journey, a podcast dedicated to supporting veterans and their families as they navigate life after the military. We feature mental health experts, stories of resilience against invisible wounds and injuries, as well as practical tools for reacclimation. The Unseen Journey, brought to you by Operation Red Wings Foundation.
Hello, everyone. I hope you all are doing great. I am Guy, your host for The Unseen Journey, brought to you by Operation Red Wing Foundation. We're joined with our special guest today, Paul from Veterans Bridge Home. If I said that correctly, did I say that correctly?
That's right. Paul? Perfect.
Awesome. Do us a favor. If you are a new listener, reach down there, hit the like and subscribe button. In the description, you'll find a link to ORW Foundation. We offer free retreats for veterans and their families. They have we have individual spouse retreats, couples retreats, and families retreats. And we're also going to have a link in the description for Veterans Bridge Home as we kind of learn about it a little bit during this podcast. So, Paul, where I'd like to start out is just hearing a little bit about kind of your journey, you know, maybe through the military a little bit, and then kind of that transition piece, because I would guess that that is part of kind of what led you to Veterans Bridge Home.
Absolutely. So, yeah, well, thanks again for this opportunity, and shout out to Operation Red Wings Foundation. I've known Morgan Sierra since the fall of 2017, and we've become good partners in North Carolina in this work. And so it's just exciting to see when you collaborate, anything's possible. So, sure. So I joined the Marine Corps way back in 1986, and I stayed for 30 years, retired in 2016.
Ooh, so congratulations.
Yeah, 30 years, and I did 11 deployments in there, most of them combat deployments. But I, you know, early in my career, I had a period of 4 years where I was a Marine security guard, so I got to guard American embassies overseas, which was very unique. I was in Ghana and Africa, South Korea, Warsaw, Poland during the Cold War, and then Casablanca, Morocco. But, you know, early on, my MOS was artillery, you know, so I can't hear anything, you know, so that's always an excuse is, you know, hey, what'd you say? You know, I have selective hearing, but I was in artillery. And then, you know, in the mid staff and SEAL ranks, as we call it in the Marine Corps, I spent some time in the infantry and heavy weapons and as a first sergeant.
Nice.
But I was a first sergeant already when we invaded Iraq. I was in an infantry company, heavy weapons company, in the Marine Corps infantry when we invaded Iraq in 2003. So I was already old, 33. That's old for the infantry. Yeah. And then I went back a bunch of times. I went back to Iraq 3 times, got 2.5 years or so of my life over there in Iraq. Lost a lot of good buddies, friends, pals, a lot of stuff going on there. And then stepped away and went to recruiting duty. It was up here in Raleigh. That's what originally brought me to Raleigh, North Carolina, was I was the recruiting station sergeant major for the Marine recruiters in the state. So in Army terms, that's the battalion sergeant major for the Marine recruiters.
Right.
So I did that during the surge, the fastest peacetime growth ever of an all-volunteer force for the Army and Marine Corps. It was exciting times. It really defines who you are and who your Marines are when they come from combat. And now the other combat is growing the force, which is exciting. And my reward for good behavior was to go back to Afghanistan because no good deed, yeah, well, you know that, no good deed goes unpunished. So you do 3 years of recruiting and you're like, hey, I'm going to go get some cushy job somewhere. They're like, no, how about you? So I ended up as a sergeant major for Regional Command Southwest in Afghanistan. So a 2-star level command in 2013 and 14. So later in the Afghanistan years, then you could think we were just at that peak and then started to draw down while I was there. Very interesting times. We, you know, had predominantly a Marine Command in Southwest Afghanistan, but we had forces from every branch in about 7 other coalition countries. So it was interesting times to see that. And then transition back from Afghanistan.
Sorry, real quick.
Say again,
Paul. When were you there?
I was there in 2013 into the early spring of 14.
Okay, we missed each other by a little bit, but I was over Kandahar West and Southwest of there, RC South. So
okay,
Highway 1.
Oh yeah,
a lot of Marines. Yeah, a lot of Marines down in that area, down in Helmand.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I know your stomping grounds, brother.
Yeah, I feel you. I'll tell you. Yeah, I, you know, I I flew to Kandahar one time on a V-22 Osprey with the commanding general of the Marine Expeditionary Force, because, you know, I was a senior enlisted for that. When as we landed, we had an engine fire on our V-22 Osprey. So again, just being here, you know, most days for me, just being here is like, it's good. So, you know, we're landing and taxiing down the runway. I'm looking out and I see this like convergence of fire trucks, you know, coming across that fight line. I'm like, that's like, hey, look at these Air Force guys getting in some training. It wasn't training. It was practical application. And that Marine flight crew was like, you know, so nonchalant, just like, you know, a corporal with a cigarette in his mouth, unlit, like, hey, get off the aircraft, it's on fire. And I'm like, okay. It's kind of like grunts after the 10th firefight. After a while, it's kind of like, well, they're not even shooting accurately at me. Like, I'll get to this in a minute. You know, let me finish drinking the water, and I'll get to your firefight in a few minutes. So, but yeah, I had time left. In the Marine Corps, so I went to a one-star command, and I was the installation, or Army terms, garrison command for the Marine Corps installations on the East Coast, based out of Camp Lejeune, which was a great learning experience, because then you have to know about transition and housing and families and everything else. And that's what really kind of set the tone for what I was going to do next was I got for 3 years or so, got to touch a much broader aspect of what it takes to run military installations. So I transitioned out and I didn't work for a little bit. And a friend of mine actually found kind of the job I'm in now. I've moved around a little bit. It's nonprofits, there's mergers, there's name changes. You're familiar with that, you know, where you change logos and things. So I've moved around a little bit, but I've never left what I've done, the primary job. But a friend of mine who's a retired Marine actually found this job for me, called me and said, hey, check your email. I found this job for you. That's you. Because she knew me. And of course, sure enough, I just was given the job, per se, you know, which is rare, where you're just like, hey, we need you to start this job, and can you start on Monday? And I've moved around a little bit, but that was my journey. You know, we were up here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then we moved away, but we kept the house here. Kids finished high school here, went to college here. My daughter's finished college since moved away, but my son's 15 minutes away. I have a granddaughter. You know, he went to UNC. His wife went to UNC, so we're rooted up here in North Carolina for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know that area well. I spent most of my career, I'm still going to call it Fort Bragg. I know, I got you. I'm still going to call it Fort Bragg, though. I spent most of my career at Fort Bragg. My oldest sister's over there in Greensboro. My other sister's just west of Raleigh. And my parents-in-law are halfway, well, you know it, you're a recruiter, it's called Anger, North Carolina. Oh, yeah. It's like this little tiny town halfway between Bragg and Raleigh, just out in the middle of nowhere. So if you ever need, you know, some fresh grown berries, you want to go absolutely up there and pick them with yourself and your grandkids, Ronnie's Sweet Berry Farm. Just, I'll give him a plug.
Absolutely.
And I actually, it was cool. We had a guest on the show several episodes back that runs a nonprofit training, transitioning military going into the farming industry. He wanted to run different types of farms. That's right. He didn't have anything covering down on kind of the berries and the kind of the nut side of the house. And I was able to link him and Ronnie up. So it was really cool.
I'll tell you what.
Exactly what you were saying. Yeah, exactly what you were saying, right?
Like transition into something like that, because I've got the right last name for it. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What's the last berry?
Yeah, having driven all. Yeah, and my wife's name's Mary, so you can imagine that. That's tough. You're going to be dedicated. You can tell your family
for sure.
You know, for 3 years of being a recruiter here, if they ever have to like back roads exfil out of North Carolina, I know them because I drove them for 3 years. So
nice, yeah, nice. Yeah, for sure. So tell us a little bit, or tell our audience, I should say, a little bit about Veterans Bridge Home, kind of what you all do and sort of how you help. I believe it's specifically transitioning veterans, correct?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the name, you know, sometimes is misunderstood, Veterans Bridge Home, that we do something with housing, like that we have housing facilities, but we don't. I'll give you a quick story of how we were created. So our founder's name is Tommy Norman. He was one of the first special forces officers in the Army that predated Vietnam. So he's old school, big time. I mean, people think I'm old school. He's old school. He's in his 80s. But
a quick question on him. Sorry. Did he like go into law enforcement after military service?
No, he did not. No, he actually went into all kinds of stuff, real estate, things like that. So.
Okay. Right. Sorry. For a second there, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, there is. There's like, a Tommy Norman out there in the veterans. Yes, there's another one.
Gotcha.
So, around 2010-ish, we're all in Iraq and Afghanistan, right? Well, what he runs into is transitioning families in the Charlotte area that had been wounded, that had great needs. They needed help transitioning back into the community. In this case, every one of them was connected to the Special Forces community in some way, shape, or form, whether they were Task Force 160 or on one of the teams in some way, shape, or form. So these were high-end operators who transitioned out, but with wounds, including one who was really wounded, and I'll save the story for another podcast, in Afghanistan. Shouldn't have lived. You know, he's alive today just because he's a great American, I think, and we needed him to stay around. But Tommy and his wife actually took him into their home. They did really well in life and have a very big home. And they did that. And then they started talking with the community to say, there's a gap here. And that gap in these communities outside these military installations is no one is being the bridge back into the community. So you can think when you're in, no matter where you're, well, I can't say no matter where you're stationed, but if you're, Camp Lejeune, your mission. You have your purpose, you have access to all the resources, but you have that sense of purpose. Even the family members have that sense of purpose while they're in. Yes. And you imagine they just parachute you back into Burlington, North Carolina, and say, hey, thanks, Paul, for 30 years of service. Good luck. And use your resources there, Marine or soldier, use your resources. Yeah. And it's not quite that easy when you get back. I mean, I was connected to the best resources that there were because of my last position while I was in. I had a ton of resources to, it's like Army Community Services. I had great friends in Marine Corps Community Services who I worked with daily. Yet when I got up here to Raleigh, it was like this, the silence was deafening. And that may resonate with someone on this call, but the silence was deafening. Going from 5 states, 7 installations, hundreds of thousands of troops and family members and problems to, just go enjoy yourself and relax. That's not a strategy or a course of action. It just doesn't work that way when you transition. No. So the silence was.
No, I'll give you a quick story on that one. Sorry to cut you off there. I always joke. I talk about it becoming, you take off your uniform, you take off your identity. I always joked and said, I took off my electronic leash, right? no more emails, text messages, phone calls. And then you kind of like, you wake up that Monday morning, right?
Yeah.
And you make your cup of coffee and you're not going to PT. So all of a sudden you watch this thing unfold. For me with 2 kids, it was wife wakes up, kids wake up, morning chaos. All of a sudden they're out the door and it's silent again. And I'm still standing there with my cup of coffee.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, wow. I just, I kind of became like this stranger in my own home. Yeah. Like, oh, this is not what I expected. So I totally get you there.
So that's the lens.
Plenty of veterans understand
that. That's the lens we do it through, and our catchphrase is, building better veteran communities, one veteran at a time. So we run a collective impact model. It's a coordinated care network called NC Serves. NC Serves, super quick, most people would get bored with it, was created out of Syracuse University, out of the Institute for Veterans and Military Families, IVMF. They run O2O and some other things you may have heard of. Because at the same time Tommy Norman saw the gap, IVMF saw the gap, which was the gap between big VA, states and federal government, and then local stuff. You had the mom and pop nonprofits that are great, that we need, but there was nobody in the middle kind of taking a look at what's going on in the transition space and in the veteran space. So they created that model, and we use technology called Unite Us to do referrals on veterans. So at the heart of what we do is this. If a veteran is at a Lone Survivor Foundation retreat in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Morgan Sierra finds that there's an additional need, well, she's busy doing the retreat and others, but she has a connection to us at NC Serves locally. So that veteran will get referred to us. And it could be a family member too, because we help them too. They will make referrals to us for whatever it may be. It could be anywhere from I want to start my own business to mental health, to employment, to education, and anything in between. Housing, of course, is our biggest need. Then what happens is we reach out to the veteran and we do intake. All of our staff, we've got about 40 staff across half of North Carolina, We have some very good intake folks. So shout out to them. One's Sean, a Marine vet who was shot three times in an insider attack in Afghanistan and lived to tell about it as a young infantry guy. So hiring Sean was actually good for me because he's a good mentor to, you know, what it's really all about. And I think that's why he does so well with intake is because he can connect with those veterans, particularly post 9/11. But we do a comprehensive intake. We also screen for mental health. We get federal money for that now. So we're screening, kind of like going to your doctor. It's not clinical. We're not jamming it down your throat. We're not running people off. But we're asking them, hey, how are you doing? How's your housing? Do you feel safe? Do you have access to resources? We're asking in a way that like a good platoon sergeant would. We're not asking it in a clinical way. We're asking it kneecap to kneecap sometimes. Like, hey, tell me what's going on. Is it good? Is it bad?
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes three or four conversations for them to really open up, you know, and say what's going on because they're building trust. They're like, who's this veteran's bridge home? You know, like it takes a little bit because it's foreign to them. But after we determine what services they need, the beauty is we write their story down one time, not five times, because there's nothing more frustrating than going to one organization, telling your story, and then somebody says, go to this organization, tell your story, go to the third one, tell your story, follow up, go back to the first organization, tell your story, and then someone have the audacity to call you out and say, your story's not consistent. Well, it's not consistent because I got TBI, PTSD. You know, yes, my story's not consistent, you know, like that's what I'm asking for the help on is my story isn't consistent because I missed bits and pieces. So we write it down one time and then we share with our service providers what information they need. It's all PII compliant, HIPAA. It's a very secure system. But we're not sharing those deep, dark details. We're sharing the information they need. And then we assign a person to be with that veteran through their journey of services, whatever that may be. It could be very complex, three to five things. Could just be they're just searching for a better job. Then maybe they ran their GI Bill out with their family, which is common, guilty as charged. You know, I use my post 9/11 GI Bill on family. If I need more benefits, I'm going to have to do something else. Chapter 35, something else too. So that's at the most of what we do, but we do have a dedicated employment team. That's out there. It's a small team, but we focus a lot on employment because what we have found is veterans will often transition and take a job, but they're not getting a second career. So they often need to take a job because they have bills to pay. You can imagine a transitioning E5 out of Camp Lejeune moves up to Raleigh. I mean, it's super expensive. They probably don't have any nest egg money because everything's so expensive. So they need some help when they first get started. They often take a job, but then they get stuck in that job. Vice, hey, let's get you, you know, through O2O for project management, and then you can get promoted within your company. And the next thing you know, now you're making $75,000 a year and have a better quality of life. So we're doing a lot of coaching. And then we also do that with employers in the community where we're going in and teaching them about the benefits of having veterans in their organization and how to have a veterans employee resource group to take care of veterans within the community or within an organization. Because we all know veterans will volunteer more, they vote more, they're more likely to run for office. It's just proven. Trust me, I've lived in Raleigh a long time. If I'm in a situation where I need somebody to go do something, I just get a hold of some of my fellow veterans and they're like, I got it. Tell me, give me the grid. That's what they tell me. Hey, give me the grid. I'll be there. I'll pick up the food bag. Some cases, they'll just go sit with someone in their house and have coffee with them because what we have found is isolation is actually a real thing outside of technology, outside of this phone. Isolation is they no longer have their buddy to chat with in a little tent in Afghanistan, and they need that too, that social connection. So we really focus on social connection. Could be anything from newsletters, but also, hey, what do you like to do? So we work with organizations, Team Red, White, and Blue, Travis Manion Foundation, organizations like that. Is we have a conversation and because they don't know what's going on in their community because they just got here. So, hey, you like the bowling, you like fishing, you like hunting, whatever. We normally know of a good resource where veterans are already going. We can make a warm handoff to an organization. Like if they like to run, Team Red, White, and Blue, next thing you know, they're more likely to ask for help if they're connected socially first. Because if they're not, they're going to feel isolated. They're not going to ask. But if they go to that running thing, even just once a month, when the life starts to fall apart, they're more likely to grab one of their new battle buddies in there and go, hey, man, I'm struggling. I need some help. In a non-judgmental way now, because they have trust has been built in the local community. So,
yeah, and I think that's really cool and really important to start to draw those connections for the veterans. Because I do agree that word you used was isolation. And I think a lot of veterans, I hear a lot of times, so I took off my uniform May 12th, 2023, hit the full retirement rolls as of, May 13th. And what I hear a lot of my buddies who recently transitioned or getting ready to transition is, oh gosh, I'm going to move as far away from the military base as possible. I'm done with this military thing. I'm going to take off the uniform. It's going to be great. I'm going to go back to, figuring out whatever life was like before the military. And then it's exactly the word you used. It's isolation. They get somewhere away from a military installation. And the next thing they know, they don't have that reach back to those friends, those teammates, those brothers and sisters in arms. And now they're struggling to find someone they can connect with. They can share their struggles that are going on. The other thing I wanted to bring up, you made a great point, which is you all are kind of casually asking veterans transitioning about kind of their how's their health doing? How's their, mental, emotional state going? And I think one of the things we do a really disservice, and I believe it's shifting some now. However, I believe one of the disservices we do in the uniform is, since it's very much a culture of almost like perfection and you're constantly under assessment and you're being promoted against your peers, is this concern, this thought process of like, well, if I go say something, all of a sudden, like, I go way down here and my peers keep going up here. And it's hard, like, I was in 19 years, 20 years service, and it's hard to, and you were in for 30, it's hard to break that, like, that thought process and that mold. So I think what you said is absolutely critical, right? Sometimes it's knee to knee. Sometimes it's sitting down and you're having that cup of coffee with a veteran. I'll give you two really cool, quick short stories. And, so I retired out of Fort Bragg, and then, in July, I moved down to, Florida for the school system for my kids. Since I've been here, I've met two Marines. And actually one of the guys who came through one of my retreats is another, former Marine, or I should say retired Marine, right? Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Absolutely.
And he's down south of me. The two Marines I met though locally, one of them didn't even have a VA ID card and had been on multiple combat deployments, been shot at, had a mortar blow up near him, killing one of his teammates. And then the other individual clearly needed help. I mean, I say clearly, right? I'm looking through the veteran lens.
Sure.
In my eyes, clearly needed help still with his PTSD. And his VA rating was laughable compared to some of the stuff he had gone through with IED explosions, ambush convoys, things of that nature. So I think, Veterans Bridge Home, spot on. Real quick, before I kind of kick it back over to you, I just want to ask our listeners, do us a favor, reach down there. If you haven't done it already, hit that like and subscribe button. Drop us a comment. If you know a veteran, if you are a veteran, if you want to get involved in any way, shape, or form, we're going to have some of this information in the description below. ORW Foundation, great place to go. Small groups, small group atmosphere. It's. I can't say enough positive things about the organization and the experience. Equally as positive and impactful for the veterans as it is for the spouses. And then you can work your way through couples and family retreats, right? So getting back over to Veterans Bridge Home, I'm familiar, right, coming out of North Carolina with NC Serves, and I'm even familiar actually with the kind of the Syracuse program. Are you all starting to be able to kind of get a little bit more embedded into the formal transition process, or are you still kind of, veterans kind of have to sort of find you either word of mouth on their own or post-transition? Kind of where are you guys at in that sort of?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would love to have somebody in front of the transitioning classes here in North Carolina. We're close. We got some advocates that do get in front of the Marine Sailors and Soldiers now that mention us, which has helped. One thing where we're making progress is the Soldier for Life program has created a program called Expiration Term of Service Sponsorship Program. And it's a couple years old now, four or so years old, the idea. And I tripped across some folks from that up in D.C. when I was at a different conference right before COVID hit. We were in the hotel lobby. They started talking about what they're doing. I started talking about what I'm doing. And we're like, oh, wow, we should have, you know, this is destiny. So we connected with them. And what they're doing, of course, is they're connecting transitioning Army families to resources in local communities. And they're working on scaling that out nationally. And of course, you can imagine it's a massive lift. But what we are seeing year over year is an increase in military families getting connected to us prior to coming back to where they want to go. So last year, 2023, we served veterans from 35 other states to North Carolina. A lot of those were through that program and also word of mouth because trust is built. So we've done it enough over the years. So if someone's coming out of Camp Pendleton, California, we help them transition back to Charlotte. We help them with housing connections, probably schools, maybe exceptional family member challenges, spouse education benefits. Like we help with all those things. You know, we're like relocation assistants after you get out is what I say sometimes, you know. Well, they're going to tell their buddies if they had a good experience that are still in. So their buddy that gets out in a year or the platoon sergeant that retired, when he reaches out, you know, to his old platoon sergeant and say, hey, what resources did you have in North Carolina? They're like, oh, Veterans Bridge Home, and here's how to get a hold of Veterans Bridge Home. So it's a little of both. It's a little more informal right now, but we do a lot of efforts working with the state of North Carolina and county veteran service officers. We do work with the Army National Guard in North Carolina, very close in the U.S. Army Reserve Command. So when National Guardsmen or U.S. Army Reserve soldiers are transitioning, we are getting connected to them quicker in a much more personal basis.
And that's huge, that kind of that time frame, that speed of connection to the veterans. Just to kind of give a little example, I was a little bit different because I got medically retired. You know, the newer med board process, at least for the Army, and I believe it's gone this way for all the services, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is it's integrated now with you start your process with your service component. You get to a certain point, you basically pause it, you go through the VA process, and then once you're complete with the VA process, that comes back over your service component, and then you finish with your service component. So for me, that was huge because that retirement paycheck, in essence, it didn't kick in immediately. Yep. However, you know, it was a very short window. I think it's like 60, 90 days later where that sort of kicked in. Yeah. And you're right, like getting the word of mouth and then getting some of the advocacy groups, some of the nonprofits connected with each other, which I think is one of the cool things about the website. You mentioned NC Serves. You know, you can go out there. There's a database and you can basically scroll through it. You can search through it, you know, if you're looking for service dog or things of that nature. And you can probably find a nonprofit out there that does work with those things. You know, what I found is it's not necessarily like all the guys and girls getting out necessarily like now, which is a good thing, or even maybe within the last, I don't know, say 3-4 years. You know, I'm in that bubble. I keep running into and I've ran into them through the retreats. I've been a team leader for a little over 50 retreats now between individual male and couples retreats at the ORW Foundation, is running into some of the veterans who've been out a little bit longer. Is there, I guess I would say, do you guys do like some kind of like a social event? Are you really just relying on sort of that connection piece to pull in some of the vets who've kind of been out in the workforce a little bit longer?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm a data guy, so I'm always looking at our data because the system we use produces data. And through my lens, I'm looking at who we are not reaching. We reach post 9/11 for the most part at scale, because if they want resources, they know how to find it. They embrace technology and they normally land with us or one of our partners. It doesn't always have to be us. We're not competing. We're collaborating. So, if they land with one of our partners, great. But we partner with local organizations for our outreach events. So we do very targeted outreach. Our social media, particularly since the first of the year, we've really ramped up our social media at Veterans Bridge Home to reach populations that we would not normally reach. And an example I'll give you is, in Raleigh, in the Wake County, it's called up here, Wake County. There's, you know, people could debate it so they don't kill us in the comments, but it's 55,000 plus veterans, according to the VA in Wake County. It's the most amount of veterans in any county in North Carolina now, including Charlotte. It's bigger now. What we were seeing was a lack of connection for resources or social connection for women veterans, female veterans. So one of our staff members, who is a female veteran of the North Carolina National Guard, who was also medically retired like yourself, she has a very unique journey, came to me and said, you know what, how about I start a women's veterans social, like a coffee? And so we're starting our first one on 29 March here in Raleigh. We're partnered with Humana for that. Humana is our sponsor. Humana is very military friendly. Humana is just, they stepped right in. It wasn't even an ask. They said, absolutely. I mean, before we even said it, they're like, yes, 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 yes. So we're going to do that where that targets specifically women veterans. But one thing we do is work very closely with our local VA. So the VA regional office, that's the benefits office, VBA. So some may be familiar with the term VBA or regional office. They do events where veterans can come in and get their benefits. So veterans who have never connected to the VA before, we market it like crazy. And then they set a date. Normally it's a 3-day period in the community. Veterans can come in, and if they've never enrolled in VA healthcare, never filed a claim, they can start from scratch. Or if they have a claim, and of course, you know, the standard 10% tinnitus that they did 20 years ago, of course, now those knees hurt a whole lot more from running up and down mountains in Afghanistan and stuff, because now they're in their 40s. They can come back in and submit for increases, but they can roll in VA healthcare. They can get screened, the PACT Act, the toxic water at Camp Lejeune. I'm one of those Marines who drank that contaminated water, burn pits, registries. That has really helped. And because they're 3 days long, what we encourage veterans to do is when they come to our table was, hey, it was great that you're here. You got connected resources. Thank you. But what I'm asking you to do is go back, get on the phone as you're driving back, call one of your battle buddies and tell him, hey, you need to come out here. And if you're really committed, bring your battle buddy back tomorrow. Tomorrow, Saturday, bring him back. Because they often won't get in the car. And you know what I'm talking about. They won't get in the car. But if you show up at their house, a cup of coffee and a Bojangles biscuit here in North Carolina, they'll be like, okay, man, I got you. And they'll get in the car, or they'll begrudgingly get in there, take a ticket, sit in line, and then they walk out of there 70, 90% or enrolled in health care, Chapter 35 benefits, whatever it may be. So that in itself makes a huge difference across North Carolina. And they do a few of those a year. But we don't like to create new events at Veterans Bridge Home. We like to partner and collaborate so that we get better together. Someone's already doing something good in the community. We don't go in there like a bull in a china shop and say, get out of the way. We have a conversation to say, how can we get better? Or how can we just reach more veterans, particularly rural veterans, marginalized populations? We have a lot of rural counties down here. And you have to think through some unique ways to reach those veterans, because down that country road is 5 veterans, but no one ever talks to them. So it's how do you do that? So yeah, collaboration is key.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I know in my experience, even though I was one of the, I don't know whether you want to call it fortunate or not, to have gone through the medical board process, because it kind of, you know, hand-walked me through that VA process, I still though very vividly remember the day where I think, you know, I joke and say, like, basically the VA just like word vomited to my email. And it was like 15 emails hit my inbox all at once. Yep. And I was like, what do I do with all these, right? So being able to partner with individuals, and the number of individuals that I've ran into that have no idea about several of the things you mentioned, right? The PACT Act, yep, the Gulf War Syndrome, the Airborne and Burn Pit Hazardous Registry, that give veterans all these presumptive conditions, these connected presumptive conditions. The guys I was telling you about earlier, the two Marines, they had no idea about any of those three things, those changes. And I sat down with them, and you know, we had some beers, we had had some chats, had dinner together, and then I sat down with them to help them kind of go through some of their records and stuff, and start to kind of reach back out to the VA. And both of them got them enrolled in the Airborne Hazard, right, Burn Pit Registry, Gulf War Syndrome Registry. I mean, for both of them, that was like another 6 presumptive conditions that they, yes, both connected like that. And the change, you know, you mentioned like the veterans who kind of like they're doing work. It's one part kind of like to fill in some of that income. It's one part to kind of keep yourself busy and connected. However, as that percentage changes, not because you're going in there and saying a bunch of fluff, simply because you're going in there and finally asking for the things you did experience and you are owed, now the change in that compensation, it really changes the math. Like what you were saying, you no longer feel like you're stuck in that job that you've been grinding on for, you know, 10, 15 bucks an hour. You have much more freedom to step back and say, what do I really want to do with the rest of my life? And I think that's so important. I think that's so cool. Paul, real quick, I'm kind of curious, and I want to ask you, you know, 30 years in the service, that's, I can't even imagine, brother. You know, what was the drive there? Like, the show is the unseen journey, right? We often talk about these elements that are kind of, that you can't see on the surface. When we talk about that idea of waking up, having that cup of coffee, feeling like the stranger in the house, that's one of those unseen elements. For you though, what was that like drive, that motivation that allowed you to stay in, that kept you staying in for 30 years?
Yeah, it's good. I'll back up a little bit. You know, my pre-Marine Corps life, it was on a farm in rural Ohio during the Rust Belt times of the very early 80s, where all the coal mines and steel mills were shutting down. So I was watching all my friends and family members, their families losing really good paying union jobs. I was the youngest on a farm. We were not doing well. I worked for some farmers. I knew one thing I knew by the time I was like a senior in high school was I was not afraid to work. So no matter what that was, I was just not afraid of it. I embraced it and did well at anything I did. And I actually, you know, for a dumb farm kid in the Marine Corps, I actually did fairly well academically. So I didn't have a lot of mentors. You know, these days it's much different in the school systems. Then it's rural counties, you know, they used to beat you with paddles back then. So, you know, if you got out of line. So I just, you know, really, you know, just going into my senior year, a year prior to me even shipping off, was just like, I'm going to join the Marine Corps. And no offense to any other service, but I'm going to join the Marine Corps and I'm going to do well at it. So I went, and of course, you know, coming a very isolated, rural, small school, you know, less than 100 in my graduating class, you know, very isolated, hadn't been many places outside of that. Went through boot camp and that was great. Of course, Marine Corps boot camp is hell, but it wasn't that bad. And then once I went through like my MOS training, and what we say, get out into the Fleet Marine Force. You know, when I was a young guy in artillery, I was a fire direction center guy. So one of the smart slide rule guys back then, you know, doing map and slide rules and stuff like that. And I was a surveyor. So you see the guys on the side of the road. That's the stuff I was doing in the Marine Corps. And I literally within 2 years, I was like, is this all you got? I don't have to get up and shovel cow, you know what, on a minus 15 degree Saturday morning. Like, is this all you got? Okay, so we went and ran a few miles. Okay, and so what? You know, that's like, is that all you got? So that's how I ended up guarding embassies for 4 years, is because I was looking for a challenge. And of course, I did. I enjoyed it. I think it was the best thing I ever did to help define my character, because it's real world 365. There's the threats. This is, of course, the threat's always been there. And I think post 9/11, the threat has always been there to our, you know, interest overseas. So I think it was serious 365 for 4 years. And I think that really defined me. And then once I started to know my own capabilities, once I got into a leadership position, you know, let's say at E6, a staff sergeant, I just really loved training, working with, I embraced the young Marines' issues and challenges and problems. Vice just saying that, putting the L, you know what I'm saying, the L is the big L, label, never, ever label a fellow service member a loser. It was, they joined for a reason. They put their hand in the air. Some do better than others, but embrace the challenge of making them a better person, not just a better Marine, but a better person in their families. And I flew up through the ranks. I'm not bragging, but geez, you know, I was a first sergeant like 14 and a half years in the Marine Corps. And it's, you know, when I got E9, Sergeant Major, 19 and a half, and I spent 10 and a half years as a Sergeant Major. And that drive comes from my growing up, I think, working hard, having attention to detail in farming and things like that. But I was also, when I went through high school, I went to school to be a mechanic. So small engines, diesel engines, and that's all perfection too. You know, so it's attention, it's tolerance, it's attention to detail. And it just naturally carried over to a fit in the Marine Corps where it's like, man, I will say, by the time I got to 30 years, I was done. So when I did my retirement speech, they're like, you know, this, and I literally stood there very humble and just said, look, I have no regrets. I've done everything I ever wanted to do. I served in every component of the Marine Corps other than MARSOC, every component, aviation, logistics, ground, all of it, recruiting. And that was by design. I wanted to get a full trip. I was just too old by the time MARSOC came around. And they're like, no, old man, you get out of line. You're too old. I was like an E8 when MARSOC was created. I'm like, they're like, no, you got to go away. But that drive carries over to what I do now, too, is I realize, I mean, there's a lot of, when you deal for that many years with service members and their families and their challenges, I think you develop a deep sense of empathy that you've walked that journey. You've seen a lot of us walk that journey. You know, there's nothing worse than, a young Marine is in a logistics, a combat logistics unit, for example. He's been on 3 deployments. He has 3 Purple Hearts. He has 3 TBIs. We didn't even know what we didn't know back then. And then they start to act out and get in trouble. And we didn't know what we were doing with medications and substance abuse and everything else. And we're starting to figure that out. We're much better. So for me, I almost feel like there's an obligation to stay in the veteran space and continue to do whatever it is. I don't care. I'll fill sandbags and pick up cigarette butts if that's what it takes to help in the veteran space. Seriously, like whatever it takes. Because I think we have a lot of post 9/11 veterans with a lot of deployments. I know the great Department of Defense had no plans to take an all-volunteer force and deploy it for 20 years. And 11 deployments in my case. Like, that was never the plan. It was, let's get out of Vietnam, because I'm old enough to have that. My senior leadership were Vietnam veterans when I joined. The idea was, let's get out of Vietnam, let's professionalize the force with volunteers, and let's make a stand against the Iron Curtain in Russia. So it was big Army in Europe and even big Marine Corps presence to back up the Army in Europe. That's what I grew up with. And then 9/11 happened. And I spent exactly 15 years of my career post 9/11, almost to the day. And I joined on September 9th. So 15 years to the day I served post 9/11 and saw a different military. And I don't even think we begin to understand the impact and resources needed for the families that went through this too. I could go on for another 2 podcasts about families and the impact it's had on them. The service members that I lost, the dignified transfers, the dog tags. I mean, I carry 19 dog tags with me every day for my last tour in Afghanistan. I lost 19. And I don't want to turn this, into anything negative. But that drive, where that drive comes from? It comes from that. It comes from when you're at on that ramp at a C-130 and you do that dignified transfer. And as a sergeant major, I was the last one to do it. And I have an obligation to them and their families to get it right in the veteran space. So that's where it comes from.
Paul, that's really cool. I definitely relate. And, remembering the angel flights I remember, never an easy thing to carry forward. To quote the movie, The Shawshank Redemption, right? We got to get busy living or get busy dying. And you're clearly embracing the idea of getting busy living. And yeah. I think that's awesome. And I think that's, go ahead.
And if I slide downhill some days, I'll go back and, I pull up like one of the last guys I lost right around Christmas of 2013. I'll go back and I'll read his posthumous Bronze Star with Valor Device citation as a reminder if I start having a pity party. And I read what he did. And it's like, oh, no. Tighten yourself up. Get back out there. Change your socks. Drink some water. Change out your camouflage. Clean your weapon. But get back in the fight for the veterans. Because when you read that, that he ultimately sacrificed himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, ultimately, he put himself in danger. It's like, that's just one. There's hundreds of stories like that. But that's just one. So, and those stories are everywhere out there. So, again, podcasts like this and things to share and to connect people, that deep appreciation for what you're doing to provide using technology, that connectedness now to where hopefully none of us ever sit there and feel like there's nobody to talk to, particularly when we're most vulnerable, where we feel we're going to be judged. And when we're most vulnerable with strangers, we feel like we're going to be judged. So we just need to continue to cultivate that this is a judgment-free space in the veteran nonprofit space. There's no judgment here. We're here to help.
I think that's really important to echo. So I'm going to give one last thought, and then I'm going to ask you sort of the question I asked all our guests at this point, is that idea of like that judgment-free zone, right? I think that's one of the things that's so powerful with the ORW Foundation retreats. As said, you know, when I went through as an individual male, there was 11 of us. And I remember getting off the airplane and my buddy Lance, we didn't serve together. However, I noticed him and he noticed me. And by the time we were off the airplane, it was like we had served together for, you know, 15, 20 years. And when you get around that veteran space again, when you make those connections, as you mentioned, that's so important to make. You have that feeling of, you know, we're in this new normal from all these experiences that we went through, military service, trauma, all those things. However, when we get into that military space, it's like that shield of, am I going to be judged, falls down, because now it's like, hey, all these guys and girls around me, they get it. They know they might not have gone through the exact same thing I did. However, they get it. They went through something very similar. Yep. The judgment's not there. The brotherhood is there. One of the things I've noticed is we're no longer competing against each other for those promotions.
Yes.
So yeah, like there's still some of that joking and, you know, haha, you're a Marine, they eat crayons, whatever. But at this point, we're really showing up for each other. And
I keep mine closed, by the way. I get jokes so much, I just keep crayons here now. I even have the MRV version of crayons, the travel pack. Sorry, got to keep it funny too. Every time I'm on a call, something about Marines and crayons. So that's okay. Got to keep it funny too. Keep it funny.
Yeah, for sure. I will tell you though, some of the best guys that I've ran across in the veteran space have all been former Marines. Whether it's been guys who worked in guys and girls, I should say, who worked in Anglico, or worked over in MARSOC or things of that nature. And the couple of fellas I'm working with now, one of them was a Marine mortarman, and the other one was Marine transportation. But you know what? Even the transportation guys and girls, they got ambushed a lot. They got hammered a lot. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I want to drop a question on you, but then I want to give you a chance to kind of think about it while I do my little spiel, which is, if you could jump into a time machine, go back in time, find young Paul, some piece of advice, something you've kind of learned along the way, something you would impart on him to sort of help, you know, navigate this life that you've had, right? What would it be? So just think about that for a second. To all our listeners, do us a favor. Unseen Journey, we're coming at you every week. So reach down there, hit the like and subscribe. We're going to have links in the description for ORW Foundation, for Veterans Bridge Home. These are resources to help for free veterans, their spouses, and their families, right? If you want to come through an ORW Foundation retreat, or if you want to, as Paul has mentioned, get connected through VBH with some kind of activity, whether it's running. I know there are bicycles, surfing, motorcycle. I think there's just about anything you can name at this point. Groups to really help you connect and almost sort of reconnect if you've moved way away from the military space. So, Paul, I'm going to come back over to you. And I see you kind of writing a little bit. I love it. And I'm going to phrase the question one more time. You know, you jump in that time machine, you go back, you find young Paul, I'm guessing still on the farm, and you want to give some piece of advice, some piece of information, something, whatever you want to say, what would it be?
I think it's embrace doing new things, and embrace that, get past the fear of doing new things, and embrace, for me, was the adrenaline of doing new things. But I think I became a junkie of that over 30 years, was that embracing, always like, I needed a fast rope, which that's another story. You know, like I was a rappel master. Like I was a junkie of that stuff, and you can probably understand, but because it was always harder, and instead of fear, you embrace the excitement of it. So embrace the excitement in the little things in life, and pause and reflect. I think early in life, learn how to use the resources around you, build resources around you, help others around you, learn something new each day, no matter the smallest thing, learn from somebody, learn something, because there's a lot of smart people out there. And then take on challenges that others will not do. So if the platoon sergeant is saying, I need 3 Marines to go do this, and nobody sticks their hand in the air, go do that. Because the next thing you know, that's opportunity. It's doors. It's not just sweeping floors. It's doors. That's what I used to say.
Paul, I think that's awesome, man. I appreciate you so much for being our guest on the Unseen Journey today. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah.
I'd love to have you back on. I think we could have some great conversations.
Yeah, we can come back on in a couple of months. You know, thanks for this opportunity. It's, I think we need to, you know, the work we do, we're very serious. Sometimes even my own people, myself, you go through such a journey with a veteran. Certain days you have to take a knee. And that's something that we've done, to say it's okay to take a knee now. You're not serving. You're not being shot at. You helped. You're working with a veteran. You revisited some trauma yourself as an employee. It's okay to jump on teams because we're remote and just take a knee and say, man, that was tough. And it brought me back to where I didn't need to be, and then work through that. Because if not, we're just going to pack it away. And packing it away is certainly not healthy. Got to get it out there, find a resource, talk to somebody, and just, you know, always embrace the battle buddy concept. You don't need a lot of battle buddies. You need a couple.
Yeah. Now you got me thinking. So I'm going to drop 2 quick nuggets, and then I'm going to cut out. So my first nugget is this: if for all my veterans out there, you'll get this analogy, right? We have our rucksack, right? We're getting ready to go on our foot march. And if you keep taking all that stuff and you keep packing it away, what happens? The rucksack gets heavier and heavier and heavier. Eventually you're going to hit a breaking point, and it's not going to end well for you, right? Whether it's a massive mental break, whether it's a massive physical break, it's just not going to do well for you. Open that rucksack. Like Paul said, unload that baggage, right? Come to ORW Foundation, get on NC Serves, reach out to VBH, grab a hold of any of these resources that resonate with you, which I think is an important thing that I really like. Paul said, you know, enjoy the little things, right? Do those little things. And maybe it's even learning something new. I know there are nonprofits associated with surfing and fishing and all kinds of things. The second one is, I think I still have it sitting on my, yeah, here we go. I got to share this one because, you know, you were mentioning the humor. So this is my emotional support pickle, and hopefully my camera focuses, but it says, I will always be around to let you know that you are a big deal.
Love it.
So on behalf of the Unseen Journey host, or as your host, Guy, brought to you by Operation Red Wing Foundation. Thank you again so much, Paul, for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do us a favor, hit that like, subscribe, and we'll see you back next week.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Unseen Journey. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. If you're a veteran or a supporter of veterans, please think about contributing to ORWF at orwfoundation.org to help veterans in their transition. We also extend an invitation to veterans to explore our retreat opportunities where they can connect with peers and embark on a healing journey. For additional resources, visit our website at orwfoundation.org. Our heartfelt thanks to Operation Red Wings Foundation for making this podcast possible. Together, we can make the Unseen Journey a little easier for our veterans. Until next time, take care.